People Leading People is a podcast about the stuff that pops up when you lead people at work. Join Brennan McEachran, CEO of Soapbox, and me, Jillian Bora, customer experience at Soapbox, as we interview the people leaders that inspire us most.
Alyssa Furtado is the co-founder of RateHub Inc. and CEO of RateHub.ca, the leading Canadian financial comparison site for mortgage rates, credit card deals, deposit rates, and insurance. Alyssa and James Laird co-founded RateHub Inc. in 2010 and have since grown the company to 70 full-time employees. Under their leadership, RateHub Inc. has launched its own in-house mortgage brokerage, Canwise Financial. Thanks for joining us, Alyssa.
Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. It's great to have you on the podcast. And, you know, we've heard a lot and read a lot, but would love to kind of jump into it. One of the things we always get people to do is kind of walk us through maybe your leadership or management career from, you know, what was the start and you know, where are you now and what are the kind of bumps and bruises along the way?
Yeah, that'll be a fun ride. So right after graduating from university, I worked as a consultant for the first 2 years. And I didn't have a lot of exposure to being a manager myself, but I think one of the best ways to learn about management styles, what really resonates with you, what you think makes an effective leader is by following someone. And that someone can be a really strong manager, but we often learn just as much, if not more, from a manager that's really challenging or not as easy to work with. So the neat thing about consulting is I got exposure to a lot of different styles and a lot of different leaders. And so I could take the parts that I loved and really reflect on the parts that I found more challenging to work with. Earlier on in my career, just after I graduated, I actually started with one of my best friends, a company called Break Into Business, which helped young kids learn about entrepreneurship. And so through that process, I actually was able to, you know, manage camp counselors and do some hiring there. And that kind of gave me the chance to dip my toes into management. But it's really been through the process of building and scaling RateHub that I've, you know, really been thrown into the deep end and had to pick up some leadership and management skills as quickly as possible and really develop myself as a leader in this company.
So going to consulting, what were some of the good, the great, what were some of the ugly things you saw as you got exposure to other leaders?
So I think that early on, I realized that my favorite leaders were the people that didn't think they had all of the answers. And so were able to, you know, lean on their expertise and lean on their experience, but still keep an open mind, ask questions of their juniors and really listen and be open to changes. So that was something that I definitely picked up on. And also the ability for a manager to create, you know, sometimes it's referred to as a psychologically safe zone. So, you know, create an environment where you feel comfortable if a mistake's been made or something's happened, that you feel like you can go to that manager and be in it together as you work for the solution. And I think, you know, one of the other great things, consulting environments are high performance environments. You're getting up to speed and a lot is being thrown at you very quickly. And so, you know, it was good to work in an environment where there were such high expectations and watching managers navigate that and get some of the, you know, us juniors up to speed as quickly as possible.
So there's got to be a few or like one or two examples of like, you know, you experience something and you're like, man, when I get the opportunity, I'm not going to be that person. Do any of those jump to mind?
Yeah, I think I remember one of my experiences. I had been working with a manager. I was new on the case and I hadn't done a great job on one of the tasks he had wanted me to do. And he let that carry over into, you know, when you're consulting, you're traveling a lot together and spending a lot of time together. And so he let that carry over in his behavior to me outside of work and just how he was speaking with me and addressing me. And, you know, so that was a really hard experience. But then about a week or so later, he also apologized for it. And so I think, you know, both of those things are important. It was a crappy experience to go through, but also the power of a manager, you know, owning something that they've done that, you know, upon reflecting, they didn't think was right. That can be a really powerful tool. And sometimes people as you know, as a leader, you feel like you can't be vulnerable at all. But I think it's important to admit when you've done something wrong and take ownership. It's really disarming.
Totally. So now kind of fast forwarding, you start RateHub Inc., you get that whole team started. You mentioned you don't have a ton of management experience at this point. And, you know, you're building the team. So at first, I'm sure it's a small team. It's easy to communicate. Everybody's on board with the mission. But as you grow, you know, how did it feel to step away from that day-to-day and empower division leaders and other more senior leaders at the company as the team was growing?
So RateHub is about 8 years old now. So there's been, you know, many different phases. And because we bootstrapped for the first 7 or so years, I feel like our growth story might have been a little bit more slowly, and we went through many different phases. So I think exactly like you identified, the first few years were actually quite easy for all the reasons that you mentioned. You know, communication was just so easy. We all worked together. There was so much trust. Everybody worked with everybody, and it was super easy. And probably, you know, hiring the first around 10 was really easy. And then as there started to be multiple levels. So anytime you introduce a new level, I think that always creates challenges. And I think for my own personality type, if I feel like someone is really competent in a role and really raring to, you know, to take things over, I find it quite easy to let go of the work. Some of the adjustment is, you know, as the organization grew, was adjusting to not knowing everybody and not getting to work with everybody directly. That was very different and challenging. And then I think as we've gotten bigger and, you know, introduced more levels and really grown as an organization, the side of the business, RateHub.ca, that I manage is about 40 people. Lots of challenges around communication. You know, how do we communicate enough, but not too much? Make sure everybody's kept up to loop on the, you know, what we're doing for the next quarter, but the bigger challenges. But, you know, also making sure we're not always in meetings and have enough time to get stuff done.
Awesome. So I want to zoom in on that because I think that's something that not a lot of people have an easy time doing, which is, you know, I think a mix of scaling yourself and letting, you know, go of some of the day-to-day tasks or the individual contributor work that, you know, you're good at and you know how to do very well. It's one thing, actually, I was in Denver and we were chatting about this in a group dinner. And this exact topic came up. And one of the things that, you know, we all kind of agreed was at the start of your career, like your self-worth or your impact at the company really comes through the work you do, the things that go out to clients or customers or production. And then all of a sudden, as you know, management kind of creeps into your role, that changes. And a lot of people, I think, have a hard time with that. What do you think, shifts, I guess, in terms of, you know, the value you provide to the company as that individual contributor to manager leader shift happens?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that I look at it as there's two major camps of people. So I think there's the person that you described that is, you know, an absolute executional beast. They're super process driven. They like doing things in a very specific way. And, you know, many founders that I speak to say, but how do I get rid of this task? Like no one will ever do it as well as I do it. That's not as natural to me. I think I am a natural delegator and maybe that's weird. So I'm almost the opposite. Anytime I'm doing a task that I think, oh, I've done this 10 times, I could package it and I could teach someone how to do it, I become obsessed with passing that knowledge on and having somebody else do it. But I think that sometimes my style can be more, you know, give someone a task without making sure, you know, have I explained it well enough? Are they 100% ready to take it on? I'm more of the style of, you know, give enough rope to let someone hang themselves. I don't know if you know that expression. And so I think that, you know, the type of person that hoards the work, they might naturally do a better job of making sure everything's super structured. The person's absolutely ready to take it on. Everything's clearly described, but they hold on to that work more closely. That's not my challenge, but I need to make sure that, you know, that individual is ready to take, to take that on. What I always say to people who are going through that challenge of, but I'm the best person to do that. I always say, you're absolutely, you might be more productive than one other person, and you might even be more productive than two people, but there's no way you're more productive than three of the right people in the right role. And so you just, if you want to scale and you want the organization to be about more than just you, which has always been one of my goals, then it's something you have to get better at. And I also think that in your career, as you evolve and you start working with really talented people, it should actually become quite the opposite that, again, there's no way you're the best at every individual skill set. So if you find those people that complement you, they should be way better at that aspect of the job. And that's, I think, where it becomes truly rewarding to work in a team, when you're working with people that, just amaze you every day because of what they're able to do that you never would have been able to do on your own.
And what are the, if any, what are the processes or the mechanisms that you've set up at RateHub to kind of have those checks and balances? So, and specifically for how you manage people, it sounds like you put a lot of trust in people and you hire the right people so that they can get the job done. What are the specific moments in time that you're checking in on how things are going, or what is the process for checking in on that kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, at our leadership team level now at RateHub, we get together once per week, all seven of us, and we meet for about an hour and a half. And in that meeting, we, identify the most important things that we have to get done in that week. We identify what we need to discuss and what we need to get on the same page, or sort out any issues that have come up. And then we walk away with a number of to-dos. And then I also meet my leadership team members for about an hour each on a one-on-one basis each week. And so in that time, that's a great opportunity to really dive into the work, check in on things. And, you pretty quickly realize if the person's able to is it someone you can check in on once a week, once a month, once a quarter?
Mm-hmm. I think just jumping in there, because I think this is, again, like an interesting thing new managers go through. You're used to working and completing your to-do list and your task list. And then all of a sudden you're the person who's now booking, if you have, five direct reports, five, hours of meetings, just one-on-one plus, an hour and a half each week, which is really about one day a week, just pure in meetings. What do you try to get out of those one-on-one meetings that you can't get maybe outside of it? And what's the difference maybe between your goals in the team versus in the one-on-one setting?
Yeah, so I think that, it's also an extreme case to go from having no direct reports to having six, because then it does start to take up a ton of time. But the purpose of the one-on-one is, rather than meetings 7 to 14 times through the week for quick touch bases. One of my leadership team members does an amazing job of just comes in with like a very fleshed out agenda, knows all of the things and decisions he wants from me, and he really controls the meeting. And, of course I can add any questions and stuff like that at the end, but he does such an amazing job of leveraging my time, because in that, 1 hour chunk, we can get through and make all of these decisions rather than having, 10 emails and him stopping by my office four times and breaking up workflow. And so that's really the purpose of the one-on-one.
And then the team is more context for the group?
Yeah, or things that we need to solve together, right? There's things that might make sense, my director of sales and I can in a room make quick decisions, but anytime there's things that start to touch marketing and product and technology, when we weren't meeting as a group on a regular basis, it was just creating the need to set up all of these ad hoc meetings. And you just don't have time in your schedule. So something that I've been spending a lot of time thinking about this year, how do we become more effective as an organization at meetings? It's really a good reminder that meetings shouldn't be status updates. We can do those via email. We can circulate those before. Meetings are about getting the right people in the room to make decisions and move things forward. And you want to be as efficient as possible in doing that.
Okay. So jumping to kind of efficient frameworks and things, we chatted, just before this briefly about your, entrepreneurial operating system. And I think I read somewhere online that we're probably using the same one. So my guess is our management meeting looks similar to yours and our quarterly offsites look similar as well. What do you think, what is this EOS thing and what is it, what value does it provide?
Yeah. So, and it's interesting because the EOS system is getting a lot of traction in the startup community. So I run into a lot of entrepreneurs in Toronto that are experimenting with it, trying it in their business. So I definitely think that it's, you know, an option to investigate. So I think that, you know, as we scaled the organization and I had only ever been, I'd worked for 2 years in consulting and professional services is very different than building, you know, a product-based business, direct to consumer that has a very cross-functional team and has six different functions that need to work really well together. I realized that I hadn't been in an organization where I'd seen this done really well. And so I needed some kind of framework or system to figure out, okay, you know, and through pulse surveys, we were asking people, do you know the goals of the organization? Do you feel like you're kept well informed? And we thought our scores could be a lot better in those areas. And so I had met Shelby, who's a facilitator that can help you implement this in your business. And he and I had had a number of conversations and he told me, you know, the first step is to buy a book called Traction, written by Gino Wickman. And I read it on a plane and it literally was describing every single one of my pain points in the organization at the time. You know, it describes like companies go through this process of hitting the ceiling where, you know, you might have had crazy years of growth and then things just start to slow because you don't have the right people in place. You don't have the processes. There isn't enough organizational clarity. And so, yeah, everything just resonated. And I thought, you know, this is the pathway that I want to take the team down. And that started last fall and it's been great.
So what are the kind of before and after there? So what are those pain points that you're experiencing? And hopefully there's someone listening that says, oh man, my team is not aligned or I keep repeating the same things, but people still don't understand what the objectives are. And any tactical things that you did because of that book that just paid off massively?
Yeah. So I think I'll split it between pain points and then some of the tactics and really tools that you learn through the system. So some of the pain points were things, you know, like the engagement surveys, still people not knowing what the broader goals of the organization's was, not feeling informed, trying to figure out what they could do to help achieve the goals. So that was definitely it. Me not having a great sense for, you know, I just wanted to look for a framework that helped us with how to set goals, how to communicate those goals, how often to have meetings, how, when to meet as an organization. And I think just we realized that what we had, you know, looking back, the structure and what we had been doing wasn't going to get us to where we wanted to go in the future. And just, you know, in a scaling business, trying to keep it manageable. There's just so much going on and me trying to figure out, okay, how do I get a hold of the organization and make sure that I feel like it's under control and being well managed, and not just this crazy growth engine. So some of the tactics and tools, there's kind of six pillars of the EOS system. Stuff that has been amazing for us has been our meeting cadence. So our leadership team meeting and what we call a level 10 meeting. So one meeting each week for an hour and a half. And then each other department in the organization has their own level 10 meeting. And so that was just amazing. We weren't meeting enough as broader groups. And the whole point of the level 10 meeting is to bring up issues and solve them and work on them together, make those decisions and drive to solutions. And then having that forced weekly in the departments also just gave an awesome forum to keep the whole team updated. So prior to that, we were doing a lot of one-on-one meetings, but we weren't bringing people together for that cross-team collaboration.
And I think it's something as like a manager, you don't really realize, right? Like the team meeting isn't necessarily for you. And you don't realize that, hey, I have so much information power on the team. I don't even know how much I know. And just scaling that communication person to person to person to person, getting them in the room together is almost like avoids a lot of the interpersonal issues, I think, that start happening.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right that the manager, you have to realize that you'll often have more information. And so you're not always the best judge of, you know, are you communicating enough? You've really got to ask your team and find different forms and methods to get that message across. Another tool that's been really helpful for us is what's called rock setting. And so the concept of rocks is, you know, most organizations try to get too many things done and in the process don't get those three most important things done. And so every quarter, each member of the team, we start with company rocks. So what are the 3 to 5 things that if the company got this done this quarter, we would all consider ourselves successful? And then that breaks down to the department level, and then each individual has their own rocks. Developers building with a product manager should probably have some similar goals and rocks, or we should understand, you know, why they're different and how they'll both get done. So I think, and you know, a number of people have said, you know, in previous roles or in previous companies, you know, I've just been sort of doing my own thing, and I didn't know that I had, you know, this alignment on these are my most important three things. My manager agrees, the CEO agrees, et cetera.
Cool. So quick question about the company rocks. The way you said it, it kind of sounds like everybody sort of sits down in a room and together determines what the company rocks are. Is that how it happens? Or is it kind of starting at a bit of a higher level at a leadership team meeting, for example, and then brought into the different departments by those division leaders? Or how is that rolling out?
Great question. So we start to set the company rocks. We start at the leadership team level. Everybody takes about 10 minutes, writes down on their own sheet of paper what they believe the most important things are. And then we go around the room one at a time, reveal them. And basically, you know, usually the ones that get the most votes quickly rise to the top. And often there will be 3 to 5 rocks where almost everybody has it on their list. But otherwise we debate, prioritize, and sometimes, you know, something that might be really important for our CTO is important, but it's not at the company level. It drops down into his rock and the dev team then tackles it. So at the highest level, the company rocks, the leadership team sets them. And then each department, you know, there might be product might have a rock at the company level. The product leader will take that rock and then with his or her team, go around the room and determine at the product level what the most important things are to get done.
Awesome.
That's awesome. And one thing I think that is really neat about kind of that process, because I think some people listening are going to be like, oh man, that would be chaos if everyone voted on some of the top priorities and we debated about it. How would we get out of that room? But that one of the interesting things I think that comes out of that is not only deciding what your rocks are, but deciding like what issues, what challenges you're not going to deal with this quarter. And you can kind of push those off to the side and said, yes, these are things, but they're not things that we're going to deal with as a business, you know, today and now. So don't get too hung up on them. You know, we agree they're things, they're not things for today.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have the debate and necessary dialogue to get on the same page about that. But, you know, you brought up an interesting point about, you know, how do you balance so many opinions and thoughts in the in a meeting? And I think I've been learning a lot about that as well. And you know, you can use things like everybody take 10 minutes on their own, or let's get out the post-it notes, and then everybody gets a chance to get all of their thoughts out. And then in a controlled manner, you can go around and usually you find that there's a lot of alignment, but then it focuses in on where there isn't alignment. But you know, the EOS system really teaches you, okay, everybody go around the room, state your opinion, but then the leader decides and we all rally behind that decision.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, it's time for our favorite part of the show, the secret question. So if you could, for me, please, pick a number between 1 and 3.
I'll go with lucky number 1.
Number 1, what's the best piece of advice you've received or heard about leading people?
So one of the best pieces of advice, and I might have actually read it, I can't remember exactly where it came from, but it said that, you know, the more you're building up a conversation in your mind, the more difficult a conversation that you need to have with someone seems, it probably means that it's that important to have it. And I think that in managing people, you know, depending on your personality type, it can be hard to deliver, you know, constructive feedback and that sort of thing. But the more that I feel I want to put off a conversation, that's almost, you know, the leading indicator that that conversation needs to happen immediately. And so it almost, you know, that uncomfortable feeling or that tendency to want to avoid forces me to have those conversations as soon as possible. And you know, people, you know, I've really been learning that people just appreciate honesty, and most people that you want, you know, the great people that you want on your team want that feedback and want to work on things with you. And as long as you're, you know, bringing things up in a rational and fair way, backed up by examples, you normally have some great conversations and get through things as a team.
I love that. I think that is so true to how I felt in certain situations where there's just this buildup of, I don't know, stress and anxiety about, you know, bringing something that you know, I know emotionally is true, but I just can't find the words to get it out of my mouth. What tips do you have for kind of breaking that ice? What's the way to just, without venting on someone or you know, word vomiting all over the place, how do you just start?
It's a great question and it's a challenge. I think like so many things, I almost don't want to take this as a cop-out, but it always has to map back to your leadership style. Some people, you know, thrive in confrontation and it's not as uncomfortable and they're able to do it. Because I know, you know, as you described, it can be more uncomfortable for me. I do have to spend time thinking about it, and making sure I'm trying to, you know, remove all emotion from the conversation, and bring it up in an as neutral as possible way. And I think something for me that's really helped, and, you know, it's an important part of any kind of management best practices, is just always having examples to back up what you're describing, so that the individual, you know, oftentimes when we say things like, ah, you didn't, you know, step up in that meeting, you know, that's really hard for one of your direct reports to understand what they didn't do and what you expected of them. So instead, you know, when we set up that meeting, I would have expected you to set an agenda and objectives, and it would have looked like this. And when we hit, you know, when this person asked this question, I really think that's on your accountability to know that, and here are the ways that you can set yourself up for next time. And then that becomes a much clearer message that someone can action. And it's also an easier message to deliver, because it's not about, you know, the person, it's about the work.
Totally. Do you naturally bring those up is that like part of the natural agenda for your one-on-one conversation?
Yeah, either one-on-ones or, you know, directly right after meetings, you know, just getting into the habit of debriefing with your team and that sort of thing.
Awesome. Great.
Well, thanks so much for your time. Before we say goodbye, I want to throw it over to you. If you have anything you'd like to pitch or anything you'd like to say to our audience, the next 30 seconds are yours.
I think that, you know, an important thing to think about is, how to help your manager manage you best. And so, you know, on that last point, we talked a lot about giving feedback and recognizing that when someone's giving you feedback, it is difficult for that individual as well. And so there's a huge responsibility. If you're truly committed to improving and being the best that you can be, you want to make it easy for people to talk to you and be direct with you. And I think it's important to take ownership over that. So, you know, thanking people for feedback and being like, you know, that's a really great point. You can still offer, you know, some thoughts and on your side and that sort of thing, but just trying to remove all defensiveness and sometimes that's better by walking away from the situation, really reflecting on yourself, thinking about it, and then you can come back in a professional and mature way.
Love
Great.
It.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thanks so much, Alyssa.
Thanks, guys. It was a lot of fun.
People Leading People is produced by Soapbox, an app that helps managers and employees work better together by giving them a place to manage their one-on-ones, team meetings, and company-wide discussions. Download it for free at soapboxhq.com/free. Special thanks to our editor, Joel North. If you liked what you heard today, do us a favor and give us 5 stars in the reviews. And if you're really feeling the love, leave a comment with a secret question you'd like us to ask in an upcoming episode.